Good evening to you all. I'd like to begin, and I'm afraid that if you were here earlier when I spoke on meditation, you may have heard this quotation before because it's my favorite in all the world. And it pertains particularly to meditation. Can you all hear me? Is it clear? Back there. Okay. There is an inmost center in us all where truth abides in fullness. And to know rather consists in opening out a way whence that imprisoned splendor can escape than seeking for a truth supposed to be without. The important words are at the beginning. There is an inmost center in us all, not in just me or just you, but in us all, where truth abides in fullness. And this really expresses a basic theosophical concept, which says that the whole universe proceeds, as it were, out of one cause. Whether we call that cause God, a reality, truth, by whatever name, it is the same thing, or if it is a thing, the same of the same nature, and each one of us is rooted in that. And so it is always accessible to us, although we don't seem to realize it in our personal selves. So that basic concept of oneness, which theosophy has brought to the Western world, is the basis for any idea of meditation. And it includes even the religious aspirations and philosophies that we have perhaps been brought up in and are looking for expansion from or also within. Therefore, my meditation definition is that meditation is that state of consciousness in which there is nothing that is separate from anything else, where there is no separation. If we are considering a concept, when we meditate, that concept fills our whole consciousness. We concentrate on it so completely that there is nothing else but that concept, and we experience the fact that we are that concept. So meditation, in a sense, is deciding what we want to become and then removing the things that separate or that divide and finding some method in which we become the thing that we desire or that we wish for or that we aspire to. Krishnamurti says that meditation is freedom from thought and a movement in the ecstasy of truth. And we could say that and it is, of course, very difficult to describe what one experiences in meditation, but the nearest thing we can say is that we experience that oneness from which we came. An experience that we have all had, I'm sure, can illustrate this in a small way. That when we fall in love, I'm sure you have all fallen in love in some way or other, we become so engrossed in that other person. We're aware of nothing else but that other person. Everything that we are and have and do and be is wrapped up in that other person. And we expand and, in a sense, we become that other person, right? I think, is that too ambitious a definition of falling in love? I think we've all had that experience, don't you? And so, as it appears that our purpose in life is to understand the universe and our place in it, our purpose in it, perhaps meditation is a way, only one way, where we can pursue that understanding. And I think that the message I want to emphasize and bring to you tonight is that we use the small self that we seem to be, that the reality that we now have, in order to become free from it. Because, as the poet says, from trailing clouds of glory do we come from God who is our home, and goes on in that poem to describe how we come as children, open-eyed and clear and beautiful, and gradually, because of the experiences we have in this life and perhaps for many lives, we build ourselves into a prison of wanting and needing and taking and all of those things that make us separate personalities. And since we have built those prisons ourselves, the only way I believe that is really, really permanent to break them down is to use the parts of them to effect that freedom. So in the methods that I'm going to ask you to share with me tonight, we are going to use parts of our personalities to understand what those parts are, to see them as tools, to get to know them intimately, and to understand their potential, their necessity for our development, and at the same time to free our greater selves from their imprisonment. I would like to suggest that the state of meditation, that state in which there is no separation, is a natural state for every human being. And as I've suggested, it is the crust or the prison that we have developed around ourselves that keeps us from knowing ourselves as that state. We have focused our attention and centered ourselves in the reactions to life that have become habitual to the extent that we are cut up from the reality. And in this way, we really don't know who we are. Meditation is a way of regaining that reality, of knowing that truth again. And I would like to say right away that I also believe that no person can teach any other person to meditate. And in spite of all the hundreds and hundreds of books and yoga teachers and all of that kind of thing that are available to us, it is really the truth, I believe, that all one can do is devise some methods, suggest some ideas to follow, work up some practices that may help the person, and at the same time hope that that miracle of expansion will occur. But in terms of teaching someone, because it seems that one could follow a practice endlessly and never have the experience. You might go to a teacher who says, if you do so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so, you will experience meditation. But actually, you may just be repeating the practice and be imprisoned in the practice in that sense. So I think we do not deny the value of the mind. We do not deny the value of emotion. We do not deny the value of the physical vehicle. But we can change the focus of our consciousness so that these parts of ourselves become the tools we use to become free of their limitations. Okay. Recently, I received in the mail a copy of a cartoon sent me by Joy Mills, and many of you who live in this area probably remember that Joy Mills was the national president for many years here, and that she is now the teacher, the director of the School of Theosophy in Crotona in Ojai, California. And since I teach this class at that Crotona school occasionally, she sent me the cartoon, and it depicts Bert and Ernie. And all of you know, I'm sure, who Bert and Ernie are, right? Anybody who doesn't know Bert and Ernie? No, okay. Well, Bert and Ernie, it shows Bert and Ernie holding up placards. And Bert's placard has a sign on it which says, Bert and Ernie's one lesson, guaranteed successful meditation course, price $125. And Ernie's placard says, Bert and Ernie's one lesson, guaranteed successful meditation class, sit down and shut up. And while that's humorous, it really succinctly puts the situation, doesn't it? Because in the first place, most of us don't sit down long enough. And if we sit down, we are not quiet. And perhaps one of the key words in talking about meditation at all is that we, in the processes, in any process of meditation, almost, the purpose is to become quiet. And it's suggested in many approaches to meditation that if we become quiet enough, if we can be quiet in all of our parts that we know we have, that it's as if they fade away and we experience something much greater than we have experienced before in terms of consciousness. We have to suggest that consciousness is unlimited. We might say that thinking, even thinking and being aware of the power of, say, healing thought and knowing, which I think has been demonstrated fairly well today, that people can be helped, can receive help, can receive love, can receive calmness, can receive some kind of healing energy when it is directed by someone who can focus himself so as to direct it. There are so many things in this area that could be discussed and demonstrated. Okay, now I think that my instructions are for this evening, when I'm talking about how to meditate, is that I won't do all the talking, but that we will do some exercises together. And I think perhaps the most beginning exercise that anyone can try, and I want to stop here and ask, is there anyone here who has not had some experience in meditation? Some, few, okay. All right. Then I think it's appropriate, perhaps a quarter of you have not. So I'm assuming three quarters of you have tried a variety of methods. So I'm going to start right at the very bottom, most basic exercise that I know of. And keep in mind what I just said, that it is not the exercise that will bring the experience. It is how we use it. It's how we use it. And the purpose of using it is to enable us to become acquainted with how our minds work, how our emotions work, how our physical vehicle works, to find out what the limitations are so that we can become free from them. Okay. Some of the practical, most sensible things in preparation, I don't suggest that we have to make these very elaborate, but I think we have to be relaxed. And perhaps you can do that now. Think of every part of your body, as it were. Check out each part of your body, your ankles, your feet, your knees, your elbows, your face. Face holds a lot of tension. And try to be as calm and relaxed as you can. Sort of move your body around, become a little familiar with it. Check out its places, because if you're going to meditate, you don't want an uncomfortable spot in your knee to keep you focused on your knee and hold you prisoner there. And that's just a little tiny demonstration of how we are held to our personal selves. If they are uncomfortable, that's where our mind is focused. That's where our feelings are focused, okay? So we take a few minutes to make sure, put feet flat on the floor. If you want to be more comfortable, take off shoes, do that. And take a few deep breaths. Just take in the air and feel the air flowing through your nostrils, into your lungs, out to every part of your body, and when you let the breath out, relax. Let the tension out. Let all the cares of the day out. And so let's do that. Just each one of you, at your own pace, take, say, 3 breaths, one after the other. Draw the air up through the nostrils. Feel it flow through into the lungs, expanding them. Hold it for a few seconds and let it out. Exaggerate a little bit more than you would normally. And right away you will begin to feel a kind of relaxation, a releasing of tension in your whole being. Okay? Take those 3 breaths. Doesn't matter if you make a noise, and when you let them out, sometimes you even can exaggerate like that. If you're very uptight and you've had a terrible day, you can take, say, up to 10 of those breaths and feel rejuvenated to some extent. Okay? So as a beginning and preparation, and perhaps a word about the place you meditate in. Try to find a place in your home or wherever, in the park, if it's good weather, wherever you feel comfortable and relaxed and there is some beauty. And try to find the place that you can use every day. And preferably at the same time. And in the morning, even more preferably, because you're fresh and your brain is sharp and rested. Okay, so those being the sort of minimum requirements, we can go on. And what we're going to do is become aware of how we breathe. Just close our eyes and start focusing your attention on your breathing. And right away you'll notice, if you haven't done this before, that your mind will bring up all kinds of ideas. And you deal with the mind by saying, okay, I recognize you as my mind, my valuable tool, my helper, my computer. I have lots of information there I need, but right now I am focusing on my breath. And each time you find yourself drifting away in some idea, some feeling, some concern about someone, whatever it is, because you've given yourself this time to meditate, you keep bringing your attention back to focusing on the breath. And while you're doing this, you're seeing how the mind operates. Because you have focused yourself in the mind so much, it feels that it is the ruler of your entity in that sense. And it stirs itself up, it wants to retain that control. But it is not a good idea to fight it and reject it. You simply say, this is how the mind works, but I am focusing on my breath. I am watching my breath. And when the mind keeps bringing things up, just keep bringing the attention back to the breath. And very slowly indeed, but surely, we become the breath. And in becoming the breath, we become the peace that lies behind it, the oneness of the breath. The breath of life, and I am that breath. And in the quiet, as you will notice that your breathing becomes slower and quieter, and you become more relaxed, but not sleep. There's a tendency to fall asleep. Keep focusing on the breath and watching how the mind tries to divert the attention. And just keep insisting, I am the breath. And slowly fall back into the peace in the breathing, in the peace where all that exists is the breath, and the peace behind it. If you feel sleepy, don't feel badly. Don't make any judgment. If you have difficulty, you are in lots of company. Simply say, I am the breath. Bring the awareness back to the breath and relax. If you're sleepy, hang on, as it were, to the breath. And in a very few seconds, you'll be past that stage and will feel refreshed. Okay, come back slowly to the room. Feel yourself back in your chair. Though you didn't go anywhere, it may feel to you as if you have left. So come back and be comfortable seated in your chair. Feet on the floor. Feel yourself here in the group. Okay. The Dalai Lama says in his book, whose title escapes me, but it's in the exhibit in the library, the meditation books that were put out for your examination, that if you only did this much in terms of meditation, that if you did it regularly, consistently, earnestly, with all of yourself committed to doing just this simple exercise, he says that in a year you would have fairly good control of the mind. And although I believe what he says, I also should add that perhaps he learned to do that under very special circumstances, living in a monastery and helped by many people. So we Westerners might not find it quite so easy, but certainly simple and very valuable beginning to meditate. Okay. Are there questions? If you'd like to interrupt me at this point, unless everybody's perfectly happily going along, we'll go along to another exercise, and you'll notice we're spending very little time, and you can't really experience the depth of peace that you can experience if you give it a little more time, if you spend a little more time on it. Was there anyone who had terrible difficulty? Yeah. What kind of difficulty?
I had difficulty suppressing the thought that I mentioned.
Yes, right. For the sake of the tape, I'll say the lady said she had difficulty suppressing the thoughts that rose, right? Well, when we remember that we spent how many millions of lives focusing our attention in our thinking mechanisms, we can't expect to be free from that right away, right? But I think the idea is that if we do this daily, if we follow it, or whatever other kind method that you find works for you, if you follow it daily, very slowly, that transfer is made. So the mind does quiet, the emotions are still, and that peace is experienced, assuming that you have quieted the physical body also. Okay? Right? Anyone else? Any terrible difficulty? Okay. Then let's go on, and you realize that we're going very quickly through these exercises because there isn't that much time this evening. The next one is to feel love. The Buddha is reported to have said that to feel love for a single moment is better than to feed the poor thrice a day 100 pots of food. And I think what he is saying, to feel love for a single moment, in this context, he's saying when we leave our personal selves behind, when perhaps as a mother seeing a child threatened with danger rushes, forgetting herself completely to save the child, in that sense, where you forget self in love for someone else, then it is a more powerful energy that we are expressing than that we use when we go out to give others aid in terms of food, clothing, shelter, etc. That's not to say that there's no value in that other as well. But to feel love for a single moment. So the second exercise, the first one, you see, is using the mind to get to know how the mind works. And by understanding how the mind works, to become free of it. And this one, we are using the emotional side of our nature to become aware of how that works, how that part works, how difficult it is to leave our own feelings, our wants, our desires, our needs behind, and to give ourselves utterly to love for someone, something, some idea, some cause. So this exercise is devised to help us to realize how the emotions work and to become free then of their grip on our consciousness. Okay, so we prepare in the same way, to be relaxed, perhaps centered, feet on the floor. And we think of ourselves as centered, in a sense, centered in the center of our being. And we may each experience that differently. It's commonly spoken of as centered in the heart. But there are many people who can think and center themselves in love for someone in the sense that they hook up in some different way. Since I'm the kind of person who thinks from the heart, I don't know if I can express how people who are basically thinkers do that, but they tell me that they can. Okay, so we feel centered in the heart. And we visualize All of you know how to visualize. We see the face of someone, something that we love. That we begin to feel the energy flow to that person from the center of our being. And we visualize that person, preferably someone who needs us, who needs our help, but see the person well and happy, surrounded by light, white light. So we have the picture in front of us of that person, and we see them at a time when they were well and happy, even though at this moment they may be unwell or unhappy. And we feel love in our heart for that person. And we let that love flow outward to the person. And we see them surrounded by light. And in the same way as before, when the mind comes up with ideas, judgments, objections, whatever it comes up with, recognize, do not engage in combat with the mind, because that only gives it strength. But recognize it as a useful tool, as the computer. Say, okay, I am feeling love. And as it keeps interfering, as it keeps coming up with ideas, just quietly keep bringing it back, bringing your attention back to feeling love. Choose someone for whom it is easy to send love in the beginning. Let your love pour out to that person. I think if there were someone who could see clairvoyantly, the room would, here at this moment, would be full of the color of that love, which I believe is a rosy kind of red. We feel love for that person. And as we visualize them, it goes straight to them. And keep bringing our attention on that love, feeling that love. And if other feelings creep in, let them be what they are. Make no judgment, but return to feeling love. Bring your attention back and focus it on that person. And then let that love expand outward in all directions. Consciously let that love expand outward. Outward and outward. Touching all that lives. So that love is all there is in the universe. to feel love for every living thing, to become that love ever so slowly, to feel so intensely love for someone we know who needs us, opens up our consciousness to be that love, to become that love. And to let it flow out to everything that lives. So begin to come back to the group, come back to the room, be here, feet on the floor, centered, wide awake. Okay. This seemed to be harder for some of you, I noticed, but you may be interested to know what happens when you sit in front of a group. I have had as large a group many times before, but even I'm surprised to see that in such a large group, nearly everybody, in fact, I would say everyone, looks so much more relaxed and peaceful from here, just in these two little exercises. But many people do say that to feel love for someone and to feel it so intensely that that change in consciousness occurs is much harder. Am I right? Anybody have? Yeah, did no. Okay. Anyone want to share a reaction? Harder, easier? Another way that's a very easy, I think, to begin to meditate is to meditate in nature, close to nature, to use nature as a help to in achieving the quieting of the mind, the quieting of the emotions, and the quieting of the body. And perhaps one way is to, and certainly this is a good part of the world, to listen to the wind, to listen to the wind so intensely that you become the wind, and you go with the wind, and you are the wind. Or to listen to the sea, because it is so regular as the waves beat on the shore, it's so regular, it can also put you to sleep, but you have to watch that. And exert your willpower and say, you know, I'm going to listen. So by using the senses in that way, the hearing, to overcome the limitations of hearing is also a way. To be so intensely aware of beauty in any form, beauty in art, beauty in nature, beauty in people, a beauty everywhere as it exists in our universe, is a very simple way to get in touch with that greater consciousness that's available to us once we decide to become aware of it. It reminds me that one time when I was here, I found a record of the sea, and we played it, and the sound of the sea came into the room. And one man came up to me afterwards and said, well, I'm a sea captain, and I always got seasick when I was at sea, so it didn't help me. So everything doesn't work that way, but I live on the sea. And I find it tremendously calming. and strengthening to go down on the beach and sit and let that natural rhythm of the sea, as it were, quiet the personal self. And it's as if you feel the peace that comes with that, that the peace that is always there, if we only knew it was there. And often it's just taking the time, as I said about the cartoon, you know, we often think we're going to meditate, but we seldom actually sit down. And if we sit down, we have to make ourselves do it. We have to call on our will. We all have will. It is part of our eternal nature, which is often described as a combination of will, wisdom, and activity. We call on that divine will of which we are all a part to help us in getting to know who we are and what our purpose in being here is. I'd like to read you just a short thing from Krishnamurti, and let's use the words and the description as a kind of meditation, because we can use our minds in this way to picture and to experience what you're hearing as a reality. So be very quiet. Prepare yourselves to be quiet and listen. I couldn't think of any other way that we could use that faculty of listening, but let's see how it works, whether it works in any degree for you. This is what he writes. That morning, the sea was like a lake or an enormous river, without a ripple, and so calm that you could see the reflections of the stars so early in the morning. The dawn had not yet come, so the stars, the reflection of the cliff, and the distant lights of the town were there on the water. And as the sun came up over the horizon in a cloudless sky, it made a golden path, and it was extraordinary to see that light of California filling the earth and every leaf and blade of grass. As you watched, a great stillness came into you. The brain itself became very quiet, without any reaction, without a movement, and it was strange to feel this immense stillness. Feel, in quotes, isn't the word. The quality of that silence, that stillness, is not felt by the brain. It is beyond the brain. The brain can conceive, formulate, or make a design for the future, but this stillness is beyond its range, beyond all imagination, beyond all desire. You are so still that your body becomes completely part of the earth, part of everything that is still. And as the slight breeze came from the hills, stirring the leaves, this stillness, this extraordinary quality of silence, was not disturbed. The house was between the hills and the sea, overlooking the sea, and as you watched the sea, so very still, you became part of everything. You were everything. You were the light and the beauty of love. Again, to say you were a part of everything is also wrong. The word you is not adequate, because you really weren't there. You didn't exist. There was only that stillness, the beauty, the extraordinary sense of love. Krishnamurti has also said in a few words and sums up really what I hope to convey to you. And he says this, man, in order to escape his conflicts, has invented many forms of meditation. These have been based on desire, will, and the urge for achievement, and imply conflict and a struggle to arrive. This conscious, deliberate striving is always within the limits of a conditioned mind, and in this there is no freedom. All effort to meditate is the denial of meditation. All effort, effort is the word there. Meditation is the ending of thought. It is only then that there is a different dimension, which is beyond time. Now, I'd like to have some responses, some questions from you, and we can go on discussing if you would like to. Yes?
I have a very hard time when I get in a relaxed state. My mind just, goes in many directions.
Yes.
How do you bring that back?
Yeah. Well, that is
consciously thinking about it.
I think that you have to consciously think about it. You have to focus your whole attention on doing what you have decided to do. And I think this is the whole, it is the greatest difficulty that everyone encounters in meditation, is that, and it's really based on the fact that we have spent so much time developing a mind, a very useful mind, without which we couldn't exist. And we have allowed it to take over the management of our affairs because we identify with it. We say, I am the mind. And we slowly in meditation, very slowly, begin to say, I am more than the mind. I am the mind, but I am more than the mind. I am something greater than the mind. The mind is only part of me. Okay? And in this way, we do not get in conflict with the mind. In some forms of meditation, there is, as it say, killing off the mind, driving out the mind, negating the mind. But I think it is a surer way to get to know the mind. And that may take, as I said, the Dalai Lama suggests, and he is a very wise being, 1 year, perhaps for us it might take a number of years to achieve just the beginnings of recognizing the mind as a part of us, but not all of us, and not the reality. Okay, the reality does not change. The mind is a computer, perhaps that's offending it, I don't know. But it holds all the knowledge of past, all the information. But that's what it is. That's its nature. And it wants to keep, like a computer, shooting up information. And so we have to realize that that's the mind. We are something else. And I think when we begin to think of ourselves as something else, something more, then that the beginning of that expansion occurs, the beginning of the breaking down of the mind's hold over our consciousness. So all I can say is that it is difficult for everyone. Is there anyone here who did not find it difficult or who does not find it difficult every day? When you sit down to meditate, the mind says, well, there's this to do and that to do, and you have to do other things first, and it says a whole bunch of things, right? And gets in the way. And so it's, in a sense, you have to recognize there is a power that you can call on, a willpower that you have to use to determine that you are going to put aside a certain amount of time today, in each day, or as many times in a week as you can manage in your lives comfortably, and that slowly that focus will change. Okay. Yes?
Do you think that in the beginning, for a beginner, there might be a fear of going beyond that mind state.
Yes.
Not knowing what's going to happen if the mind finally does shut up and let you free.
Yes. The question is there a fear on the part of most people that they may go into an area they're not familiar with, and that frightens them? Could I say it that way?
Yes.
Yes. I think that's a very real fear. And people often ask me, is it possible to go and not be able to get back? You know, they have the feeling that they go so deeply into that quiet, and the fact that it doesn't have signposts and names of places and everything laid out in a way that we know, it's unfamiliar, as it were. There is, I think, a fear of letting go. And so we hang on to the prison we know rather than risking the possibility of getting lost in something that we don't know yet. And yet I think the nature of the peace that comes, could I ask if you experienced a feeling of peace when we were quiet together, or was it too short for you to do that? But I think that feeling of peace really could be called ecstasy. That when experienced is so valuable that the fear goes away. Wouldn't you say so? I saw a hand up.
Well, I don't know about ecstasy, but what I felt was like I was going with the breathing and I was concentrating on the breathing.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, that was my concentration on the breathing was gone, and then I just felt nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't ecstasy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just like a loss of boundary or a loss mm-hmm. of concentration.
Yeah, it was not. It was not nothing. Go ahead.
Something that made me aware that is concentrating on the breathing, I was aware of that, and then that was gone, and then mm-hmm. it was like nothing, you know. But I didn't experience ecstasy.
Mm-hmm. But it was an experience. I think I'm hearing you say it was of no thing, of no separate thing. That's what I think, that's a very good description. That it's as if you slip into an area where there is not the I, the personal I, judging, watching, seeing, hearing, feeling, whatever it is, because there is nothing to see, hear, or experience. You are what it is, right? And you may come back and not be able to describe. I mean, I may say ecstasy, you may say whatever, loss of boundary. Each person will describe it in his own words or not be able to describe it. Right. Yes.
Well, some simple exercise that someone had taught me at one time to quiet the mind and the emotions. One of the things you'd mentioned is the minute you start fighting the mind gets stronger, and mm-hmm. so
you're caught in war, right?
Yeah. So one of the things that I do is to acknowledge that the mind is taking my attention, and to send it love. Mm-hmm. It's like a child that's needs attention, and then give it attention, and then it's slowly integrated with what you're working with.
Right. Exactly, yes, right. To see it as a valuable part of existence, yes.
What's the purpose of meditating in the same place every day?
I think if you have a new place, you have to adjust to the new place. That emphasizes the sensation side of yourself, right? You have to adjust to wherever it is. I think it just relieves the what would you call it, the clutteredness of our consciousness. Where if we have a place, we go to it and we're comfortable, it's familiar, and we can leave it alone. We can leave it a little more easily. Though we really don't go anywhere, do we, physically? Did I see another hand? Yes.
In the exercise where you send out love,
yeah.
The kind of thing that always scares me, and maybe this is the kind of thing that he was talking about, when you have someone in your mind and you're sending that love, if some of these things that are passing through your mind are negative, and you don't have any control over it, you know, are you sending something negative there even though you don't want to? And is it all right to do that?
I think in the beginning you will certainly do that, right? But
you're hurting that person?
Well, you're thinking them anyway, aren't you? I mean, in life, you're thinking, when you think of someone, something goes to that person, obviously, right? So what you're doing is consciously sitting down and trying to feel love that can't hurt, because we're told everything is overcome by love. Every difficulty is overcome by love. So if we can feel love flowing from us to someone, that's why we start this exercise, by choosing someone for whom it is easy, or a dog or a cat, it doesn't matter. But whatever makes that heart chakra begin to work, to send love the easiest way possible for us, so that we won't get caught, so that we won't be so easily influenced by the mind sending up ideas. Because we may say, we may choose someone we love, but seldom do we clearly only love someone. There are other things in the relationship that may come up, right? It gives you an opportunity also, when that feeling, or that flowing, becomes easier, to look at the difficulty that exists also. Though you may love the person, but things are difficult between you, you can bring that part of it up to your, and let the love flow through it. And I think that I could say from experience, working in groups in meditation, that I've seen relationships transformed in that way without a word spoken between the people. And in healing meditation, particularly if there's a healing group and the group is working on someone else who is very ill, that there can be people in the group who don't feel comfortable with one another. And at the beginning, that can make it difficult for the whole group. But slowly, as they work together, those relationships will change, or that relationship will be healed as well. I have seen that happen. I think I have experienced it myself, because, you know, it's perfectly human to find one person easier to work with than another, and to not like everything about everybody you meet. But you can work with them in a healing group. It becomes healing for you and for the other person without any words. I think I could say that as true. Yes.
Along that line, for purposes other than healing, is there any particular benefit to meditating in a group setting?
In a group setting? Mm-hmm. I think everyone helps everyone else just by being in the group. It's not everybody's way of meditating, and some people find it impossible to meditate in a group. But many people are helped by meditating in a group. And certainly if you're going to help in terms of healing, as you said, or for some other purposes, to meditate together brings a tremendous concentration of energy, of love and acceptance and all that. And that's available to help anyone then. Yes?
Are we talking about two different objectives for meditation here? The first technique of focusing on the breath, mm-hmm, does have the effect of letting you quiet your mind.
Right.
Because you're not trying to achieve anything.
Right.
The second technique of focusing on love for a certain person, mm-hmm, and trying to make that more outgoing,
right,
requires you to think to achieve a goal.
Right. You can.
That seems an entirely different objective than what you first started out with.
It's true.
Which was to quiet.
Right, and I agree. I agree with you. But you can. I left one step out. Was that in preparation for any kind of meditation, you would begin with the breath, so that you would be quiet already, and you would be. If where love is, if I can put it that way, also. But it would be directing the attention then of that energy to be a healing, to do a healing work. Yes?
Could you say in relation to that, that the first method of concentrating on the breath and shutting down the mind
mm-hmm.
can turn the results of meditation more inward?
Yes.
And the second method would achieve the same state and send the results more outward.
Yes.
But send it through you so you get
yes. That's right. But I'm glad that you brought that up, because I did leave out, I said, as we prepare, not being careful enough to say doing the breathing, being aware of the breath, as a preparation for the second method, you would prepare yourself for any other kind of method of meditating by becoming aware of the breath, quieting the mind, so that you could be in charge, as it were, to do whatever. But you would be there in loving, as it were, because another word for reality is love, isn't it? Love is a principle in the universe. Like healing, we talk about healing energy, loving energy. These exist in the universe. They are not something we manufacture. They are part of the universe. And by opening ourselves to them, we become them. And in turn, we can focus them then on the healing for a particular person, or a particular illness, or a particular, or to help. There are meditations for peace in the world, right? You could do this, use it. It's using a different part of oneself, or keying into that universal energy through a part of oneself that one may feel more comfortable with. Some people feel more comfortable with the mind. Other people feel more comfortable with the heart, the emotions. Okay? Does that answer? Yes?
In the first exercise, the purpose, though, isn't to negate thought, but to be in control of the direction or the intention of the mind. And therefore, it seems to me that you are, in fact, using mind, even in the first one, by saying, this is where your attention shall be.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the second one, you are saying, now, this is where your attention shall be.
Exactly, yes. I think what I said earlier, that we use the parts of ourselves in various processes to become free from their domination over our consciousness, so that our consciousness is freed to be and has more scope, because we have limited it, we've drawn it in through our reaction to what's happened to us in life. I mean, we've reacted, we are reacting, and so we're focused in reacting. We're not focused in reality. We're reacting from habit patterns long ago established, right? Yeah, so you're quite right. That's putting it very well. Any other? Yes.
In the second exercise, as I was focusing, sending the love, it seemed to me that I kept seeing colors. Now, was that just my brain trying to interfere again, or is that, I don't know where the...
Many people have that experience at first, I find. Many people tell me that they see colors. I think it can be, well, the emotions are in color, our thoughts are in colors, right? we may become more open because of the concentrating on the feeling, become more open, and we may see, or color may become visible to us. I think it's not unnatural at all. It isn't meditating, I would say, but it's a step. And people who are sensitive anyway may have more a sensitivity. Right. Other questions? Yes.
I seem to have a problem more physically than mentally. I didn't have any problem getting to where I thought I should be. But I felt very relaxed, but at the same time my legs felt very restless, like they were very heavy, and I kept wanting to move and not be still.
Mm-hmm. You meditate habitually, or you have?
I used to. I haven't.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Did you always have that difficulty?
Yeah.
Yeah, but you noticed particularly tonight, you mean?
Tonight and lately, I just finished a different kind of class where a form of meditation involved, and I had trouble just keeping my legs, and they felt real
mm-hmm.
heavy,
mm-hmm.
and that felt uncomfortable to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think sometimes finding a different posture. Have you tried?
No.
A more comfortable. I think you have to make the physical body as relaxed and comfortable as possible. Or perhaps some yoga, you know, some hatha yoga exercises, or some walking, or some a little running, gentle exercise before you sit down can help. Whatever relaxes your physical body might help. I don't know much about that, I have to say. Yes?
So, Dr. Shell, you, what I experienced when I was doing that love exercise, I had focused on an individual that I've been experiencing conflict and there's been pain involved. And as I was focusing on my heart center, I felt real discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
And like it hurt a lot, you know,
yes.
a lot. But it just, you know, and I could hear the thoughts feeling bad about that. And well, I kept with my breathing.
Good, very good.
Yeah.
Very good. Excellent.
And
give you a...
for you is to concentrate your breathing in the area of discomfort. And then all of a sudden, I just, you know, I was going like this. All of a sudden, I sat up and felt power or energy and felt like that was gone. It just broke.
Perfect, yeah. Perfect answer, right. Yeah, mm-hmm. Try using the breathing to take away the... And feel the energy flow as you breathe to your legs, and let the energy drain out your feet, let it drain out your hands, drain out the top of your head, and you'll find that relaxes you, I think, a little bit. That helps in the relaxation. Yeah. I'm interested in your answer because you said, see, I suggested someone you love, but you focused on the conflict. Right.
Well,
I do
love this person.
Mm-hmm.
We're in conflict.
Yeah, the
so
conflict came up.
You know, you just kind of come right up against.
Right. Yeah, that's making it harder. It's easier if you begin by feeling love for a child, because we all love our kids no matter what they do or what we do. So it makes it a little harder when there's a real conflict. Somebody disagrees. But that's a very good answer. Yes.
You said to her when she saw the colors that was not, it was good, but it wasn't really meditation.
Because it's she observing them.
Because she's observing them.
Yeah.
Okay, when we were going through the love exercise, I wasn't getting into it that much until you said that the color of love was a red and rosy color.
Mm-hmm.
And when you said that,
yeah.
suddenly... I could feel it coming out of me. Now,
mm-hmm.
was I getting into it in the wrong way or something?
No, if you know that, and we have books in the library with the color plates done by those who can see. I can't see, but there are people who can see the color. It is a kind of rosy, beautiful, rosy, gorgeous red, pinky red.
was that real meditation then? But even though my mind was seeing...
It is that you are feeling love. It means that you are feeling love, right? If the, I think from a clairvoyant point of view, if that color is clear, it means that you're feeling it unselfishly. If you're still wrapped up in your own self, then the color would be gray and or brown or something like that, colored with self. So it, all it means is that you are feeling the love. But it doesn't mean that you are meditating, because the difference is that in meditation, if you have a, you interpret it conservatively as I do, it means that you become the love. There is nothing else but the love. There is no mind saying, gee, I'm feeling love pretty well tonight. You know, making evaluations. You know, well, how the mind works. It cuts things up in parts, it looks at, it divides. But
if I kind of disappeared into that color, then would that be more of a meditation?
If you became the color,
yeah.
Yes, then you would be love. Right. Yes?
I have never met, I don't know, this is the first time I've experienced any knowledge of meditation. And I feel very comfortable listening to you, and accomplish a sense of relaxation. But when I go home and you're not there,
you'll have to take.
Yeah, well, your answer, the question, the earlier question about why the advantage of meditating in a group. You can get help that way. But eventually, you have to do it yourself. Yeah. Right. No one can do it for you. And that's what makes it hard, because it's a really accepting the challenge from one's, if I can use the word, one's spiritual self, which, from the point of view of theosophy, is what our reality is. And we're accepting a challenge coming from that part of ourselves, which is real, to get to know and to focus ourselves at that center, which is in us all, where truth abides, and to know what that is, to experience it, to become it. And that means giving up a lot of things. It means changing our sense of values in life. It means a lot of things that we may not be ready to do yet, or may not really want to do yet. And so once you put your feet on this path, it probably is the hardest, most difficult, and yet I would say the most valuable thing you can ever do in life. So, and it has eventually to be done alone.